You're listening to the Beauty Brain Show, where real scientists answer your beauty questions. And now, here's Randy and Perry.
Hello, this is Perry Romanowski.
And I'm Randy Schuler.
And this is The Beauty Brains, a show where real cosmetic chemists answer your beauty question. You know, Randy, this is episode 102.
Yes, it is. Wow.
Yeah, it's no longer a palindrome. Well, it's great to be back. Hey, Randy, you know, I talked about how I was traveling last episode.
Yeah, I know our listeners are on the edge of their seats hearing your escapades across the country. Last time it was about dry skin in Denver.
Dry skin in Denver. Today it's about natural products in Connecticut.
Oh. So,
yeah, I actually flew out to Connecticut and gave a talk on natural product standards for cosmetic chemists. And it turns out it's actually a pretty difficult area in which people can formulate, right? I think one of the things that the general consumer doesn't really understand is that pretty much anyone can call themselves natural. So the word doesn't really mean that much. And it's really difficult for cosmetic chemists to figure out whether their products would actually be considered natural or not.
And well, it turns out there's no unifying set of standards for chemists to follow. So you have to kind of figure it out or follow your company standards or whatever. But it's not, you know, there's no law that says what a natural product has to be.
Yeah. And it turns out that there are a bunch of companies that are a bunch of organizations who've come up with their own standards. And what they do is that they get other companies who make cosmetics to pay them money to be certified as natural through their standards. And so it's a way for them to make some money. I think the real thing to consider, though, is that there is really no such thing as a natural cosmetic. I mean, there aren't shampoo or body wash bushes. So, you know, in a sense, to make any kind of cosmetic, there has to be some sort of synthetic or human processing, right? And so all cosmetics are processed in some way, which I think is probably a good thing, right? Because, you know, a lot of things in nature are kind of dangerous.
Yeah, well, it gets gray really quickly, right? I mean, you could say use olive oil as makeup remover, right? There's nothing synthetic about that. Now, the olive oil has been somehow processed. Maybe it's been cold pressed. Maybe it's been steam distilled. Something's been done to it.
Yeah, exactly. So I guess there are substances out in nature, which you just take that substance and lop it on your face. I guess that might seem a little more natural than, say, a formula that's been put together with an emulsifier and that kind of thing. But you can see it gets kind of questionable whether something is still considered natural once it's gone through all this processing or not. And that's the talk that I gave was about just how a cosmetic chemist have to deal with that in their formulating. And as far as consumers go, you know, a lot of times when a consumer sees the word natural on the front of a label, they'll just believe that it is, right?
Really, yeah, it's not that simple.
Yeah, it's not.
Well, today we're doing one of our question and answer shows, so everybody should stay tuned to find out if glacial water is good for cosmetics, if deodorant can be used for setting makeup, and what to do if heat ruins your sunscreen. But before we get to those, we're going to play another game of improbable products.
Now, this is the game where I find two beauty products that are just too odd to be real, and then I make up a third choice and challenge Perry to guess which one is the fake. Now, in the past...
And I do a fabulous job of screwing this up, so...
In the past, Perry has had to play against his imaginary friend, Chance. But today, for the first time ever, Perry will be playing against a real-life person. So let me introduce our very first contestant. We're so excited to have her. It is Linda from New York. Hello, Linda.
Hello. I'm very excited to be here.
We are
great
super
to have
excited
you on
to
the
have
line,
you.
Linda, yeah.
Yeah, super excited to have you play the game.
It is very exciting. I've never been on a podcast before. So.
Well, we've never had a guest on a podcast, so it's a first all the way around.
Yeah, hopefully the technology works out for it.
We hope so. And yeah, we apologize to the audience in advance. We're still working the bugs out of how to do this three-way recording, but, you know, we'll figure it out.
Yeah, because we are scientists, but, you know, chemists, not really computer scientists.
There you go. All right, well, let's get right to it. Let me tell you guys that there is a theme this week. I read an article about this Korean company that specializes in candy-inspired cosmetics. And, you know, Halloween is, you know, what, about a month away? So I thought we would do a candy-inspired cosmetic version of Improbable Products.
Sounds good.
That sounds very exciting.
All right. So, again, two of these choices are real. You guys have to tell me which one is the fake. So I'll read the choices to you. Number one, it's the chocolate bar eyeshadow made with real cocoa powder. Number two, saltwater taffy pore cleansing mask. And number three, marshmallow-flavored lickable body dust. So there you have the three products. The chocolate bar eyeshadow, the saltwater taffy pore cleansing mask, and the marshmallow-flavored lickable body dust. Linda, which one of those do you think is a fake?
I think it's the marshmallow one. It sounds... The second one sounds something ridiculous enough to be true, and the first one reminded me of this article I read a while ago, how in jail some women, they mix lotion with coffee grinds to give them a foundation color.
You know, it's funny, we actually blogged about that at one point, so that is a trend. So, okay, very good. So your guess is the marshmallow body dust is the fake. All right, Perry?
Well, these are all excellent stories, as usual, Randy. Nicely done. I don't have an obvious one. I agree that the chocolate bar eyeshadow, or chocolate powdered eyeshadow, certainly seems reasonable. But I think you're getting a little salty with the saltwater taffy pore cleanser. So I'm going to guess the marshmallow body dust. That just sounds like it's a product that somebody would make. So I'm going to go with number two, the saltwater taffy pore cleaner.
Okay.
Which leaves us, we have our good friend Chance. I know we brought on an extra player, but, you know, Chance wants to still get the statistics. So I've got my...
Hey, Chance.
I've got Chance in hand. Linda, say hi to Chance.
Hello, Chance. It's nice to speak with you and meet you.
I have to say, Chance doesn't say much, though, so let's see what she has to say about this.
All right, here we go.
And Chance says that the fake one is the first one, the chocolate bar eyeshadow.
Oh, wow. So you guys are all over the place. All right, so let me see. Let me do it this way, I guess. Let's start and... sort of start with Chance, I guess. The chocolate bar eyeshadow made with real cocoa powder is real. Yeah, that's made by this. Yeah, that's made by this South Korean company that was mentioned in the article I told you guys about. The company is called Etude. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right. And the product is called chocolate bar eyeshadow. So apparently, they put the cocoa powder in there to give you coloring, which I think would make that an illegal product, because I don't think cocoa powder is an allowable colorant in the U.S. at least.
Yeah, no, so. It is not. So.
Anyway, but it is a real product. All right, you guys seem to differ on this marshmallow-flavored lickable body dust. I know that Perry has, but Linda, let me ask you, have you ever worn a lickable body powder before?
I have not, no.
Okay, you don't have to really answer that, but that's okay.
I had to stop wearing them because I had to put one of those cones over my head so I could stop licking my arms.
that's a very disturbing image, Perry.
I actually did try to make my own edible lotion, but it didn't turn out so well.
Oh, ooh, that's a story for another show. I like that. All right, well, anyway, this particular body dust is actually a real product. It's by Urban Decay, and they say that it not only gives you an ultra-fine shimmer, but smells and tastes like marshmallows. So I wonder what the edible glitter ingredient they use is, too. That's perplexing.
Very good question.
But it is a real product, and so that means that Perry wins this episode because the saltwater taffy pore cleansing mask is a fake. I made that one up because I just ate some saltwater taffy, and it was good.
It is. It's a good product.
All right. Well, Linda, I'm sorry that you couldn't beat Perry, because you know nothing pleases me more than to see him lose this game. But just the thrill of having you on the show with us more than made up for that. So thank you. We really appreciate it.
Well, thank you both.
Thank you, Linda, and keep listening. Thank you, Linda, and keep listening to the Beauty Brains.
I will.
All right.
Thank you, guys.
Hey, Randy, did you know that I'm a feminist?
You're effeminate? Yeah, I've always had my suspicions, but nothing wrong with that.
You and some waitress at Denny's a couple of years back. But actually, a feminist, you know.
Oh, right.
In college, I was actually a women's studies minor.
Okay.
They didn't have a major in it, but... it's kind of funny. The reason I even took these women's studies courses is because I was a bit of a chauvinist in my younger years.
Okay.
And whenever I find something about myself I don't like, I sort of embrace the exact opposite of that. And I sort of went into these courses. I don't know why I went into them, but it sort of opened my mind to a different way of looking at things. And that's kind of cool. And So I continue to read books in the subject and think. And I just finished listening to the book Lean In. You know that Sheryl Sandberg book?
No, I'm not familiar with that.
She's the COO of Facebook. And I think it was about last year, the book was getting a lot of publicity. She actually took a lot of heat because, you know, she's kind of a rich person telling women that they have to work a little harder to succeed in business. So she took some heat for that. But actually, I listened to the whole book, and it was a fascinating listen. And I think it was full of actually useful advice that not only women, but men in the workplace could it's worth reading. Anyway, the way I listened to that was through audible.com. You know, the Beauty Brains has teamed up with audible.com to bring you a special offer. So if you sign up using the link audibletrial.com/beautybrains, you can download a free audiobook and to show your support of our show. And so you could get that book, Lean In, by Sheryl Sandberg, which was an excellent read. It was a quick read, too. I think I read it listened to it in 2 days. But just sign up through our link, audibletrial.com/beautybrains, for a 30-day trial, which you can cancel at any time, and you still get to keep that free audiobook.
Very good. And just to be clear, our listeners are free to download any anti-chauvinism book of their choice, right? It doesn't have to just be Lean In.
Open your mind.
All right. And of course, I'll put that link in the show notes for everybody. All right. Hey, I'm going to do one more thing quickly before we get to our question and answers, and that's I want to read one iTunes review today.
Oh, great.
Because, you know, these are extremely helpful to us to help us get new listeners and attract fine sponsors to the program. We have several this week, but I just wanted to read one quickly. This one comes to us from Skull and Combs. And I wanted to talk about this one because it's a review, and I think the only review we've had from a salon professional. So it's interesting to see the perspective of someone who works in the industry, someone who is not only a consumer of beauty products, but who's actually trying to sell beauty products to other people, and the sort of the problems that they come up against, and how we, the Beauty Brains, can actually help this person do their job in a better way. And that was what impressed me with this review. So maybe you could just read that for our listeners.
Sure. Skull and Comb says, "This is a podcast for salon professionals too. A long time ago, a client of mine stumped me when she asked about an ingredient in a product I recommended to her. I had the name of the ingredient as a reason it was a good choice, but didn't actually know why from a scientific standpoint, only from a marketing one. It was actually quite embarrassing. Since then, I've made it a mission to learn everything I can about this stuff and from all points of view. Because of this, I have built an incredibly loyal clientele, won numerous awards for selling retail in a company I work for, and all the while never feeling guilty for spreading the, what I call, essence of butterfly farts claims some companies use. I am now an educator for an international hair product company. I always encourage stylists to put on their critical thinking caps and find out exactly what essence of butterfly farts means before they embarrass themselves like I did. Before this podcast, it was difficult to refer them somewhere. Perry and Randy provide great information in an explain-it-like-I'm-five way without ever insulting anyone for disagreeing with them. Any professionals out there owe it to their career to listen and soak it in, whether they agree or not.
That's great. I love the essence of butterfly farts.
That describes a lot of cosmetic marketing.
And thank you, Skull and Combs, for showing the appreciation for what we do and being open-minded like that. I mean, you do not see that attitude, in my experience, with a lot of people on your side of the industry. So thank you for that. And it's also interesting that you mentioned we try and explain things like someone's 5 years old. When you worked with Perry as long as I have, you're sort of forced to do that. But
hello.
Anyway. All right, well, let's get on with our questions today. Perry, you were just talking about natural products, and the first question comes to us about natural products. You want to take that one?
Sure. This one was posted in our Beauty Brains forum. Incidentally, you can get into the Beauty Brains forum. Just sign up there and ask your questions there. Gemma asks, it seems as though you guys aren't the biggest fans of natural and organic cosmetics. But there seems to be a wider offering of lines at places like Whole Foods, Sprouts, and Earworn. Lines like Andula Organics, Avalon Organics, Michelle, and Dr. Hoshkova.
Bless you.
Wow. Yeah, thank you. These are quite a bit more expensive than their drugstore counterparts, and I've barely tried any of them. My question is there anything in these products that are as effective as the ones at the drugstores? They are chock full of oils and extracts of plants and herbs, but can any of these moisturize, cleanse, and tone as well as the traditional chemical-based ingredients? Do they justify the higher price tag, and will they have the same or better effect on my skin? So this is a great question, and a lot of times people do assume that when a product costs more, it must work better, right?
Right.
But I think that's one of the things about the cosmetic industry that is probably one of the biggest myths. The cost of something is not reflective of how well it's going to work.
Correct.
Now, we're going to stand by two generalizations. Number one, you shouldn't waste your money on expensive beauty products. And number two, with natural/organic products, you may be sacrificing efficacy to satisfy someone's definition of natural. As we talked about earlier, it really depends on what standard of natural that the company is following to create their products. However, that doesn't mean that you can make specific product recommendations based solely on whether a product is sold in the drugstore or the department store or whether a product is natural or not. You really have to consider what the product claims to do, how well the formula will deliver against those claims, and really how much the product costs. You ask, is there anything else in these natural products that are as effective as the ones at drugstores? The answer, maybe yes, if the product contains the right kind of active ingredient, but there's no way to answer that as an abstract question. We can only give a definitive answer if we know the claims of the formula involved.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting the way Gemma sort of framed that up. Like, is there anything in all these natural products that works as well as anything in all these drugstore products? I mean, that's the scope of that question is just just tremendous. And it's unanswerable when you phrase it that way. Now, fortunately, she did come back with a couple of specifics.
Yeah, she came back with two examples. She asked the Olay Age Defying Classic Daily Renewal Cream and the Andalu Natural Beta Hydroxy Complex Recovery Cream. This is great. When we have a chance to compare specific claims and specific products, then we can answer the question. But general questions like, does this just work better than that? It's just much more difficult. Now, we're going to put the complete ingredient list in the show notes, but let me summarize the differences here. The Olay product is $12.99 for 2 ounces, which makes the cost of about $6.50 per ounce, right? Mm-hmm. The Andalu is...
Andalu? Maybe it's Andalu.
Andalu.
I don't know. Andalu?
Andalu. Let's go with Andalu.
Andalu.
The Andalu. It's more fun to say it that way. Andalu. The Andalu is $24.99 for 1.7 ounces, which is $14.7 per ounce. And that's a pretty substantial price difference.
More than twice, yeah.
Now, both products focus on sal acid, but the Andula product has it listed pretty far down. So I doubt there's as much in it as the formula as in the Olay product. Finally, the Andalu also brags about its fruit stem cells. Unfortunately, that technology has not really been proven to be effective as far as we've seen.
Yeah, we actually talked about fruit cells in a previous show, I think. But, you know, if you believe their website, they're all about the fruit stem cells. Right. And, you know, the salicylic acid that's in there, the salicylic acid, again, it's, as you said, it's so far down the ingredient list, I'd be really surprised if there's enough in there to be effective. So clearly in this case, I think, you know, the Olay is probably the one I would bet my money on being the more effective product, and it's more reasonably priced.
Right. And it's produced by a company, Procter & Gamble, who spends a lot of money on research and development to put these things together. Now, I don't know Andalou, how much money they invest in research and development, but I'm guessing they're not going to compare even to what P&G is doing.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's kind of like we always say, look, you know, if you like this product, I mean, maybe it has a great feel, maybe you like the fragrance, whatever, you know, if you like it and you can afford it, then go ahead and use it. It's fine. But I don't see anything to suggest it's going to be worth the extra money just based on the ingredients.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you can overpay for products if you want to, and some people like to do that. They like the way things feel better, things smell better, even just having the packaging in their house. But as far as whether it works better, my money would be on the Olay.
All right. Well, let me answer a question about sunscreens, all right? This one comes to us from Random Walker. Is that a Night of the Living, I mean, a not Night of the Living Dead? What's the show?
The Walking Dead.
Walking Dead. Is that a Walking Dead reference, maybe?
It might be a reference to statistics, in which it's a random walk to describe the flipping of a coin.
I'm still going with zombies.
Yeah, probably.
All right, so Random Walker says, here's my concern. I recently moved to southern Spain and I brought several bottles of Anthelios sunscreen back. I used to store them in a car dashboard, and the temperatures here rose to 35 to 40 degrees centigrade, which is about 105 degrees Fahrenheit. Just now I read an article that states that sunscreen should be stored at a comfortable 25 degrees centigrade, or 77 degrees Fahrenheit, because higher temperatures break down the UV filters, making them less effective. And then he's actually provided a couple of links if you want to read about that. We'll put those in the show notes. He says, to be on the safer side, I definitely replace them all because I plan to start a chemical peel treatment soon. But since I purchased all, you know, a bunch of these bottles, it's a pain to watch expensive things be thrown away.
Yeah.
So basically he's asking, you know, can I still use some of these or not? You know, do I throw them away? What do I do? So great question. So
yeah,
it is true that prolonged exposure to high temperatures can reduce the efficacy of sunscreen formulas. And part of that is just the effect on the emulsion. So most sunscreens are mixtures of oil and water. And, you know, and this is true across really all classes of cosmetics that are oil and water mixtures. Those emulsions are very hard to stabilize.
Right.
And really, I think there are probably no, completely stable emulsions, right? It's against the law of the second law of thermodynamics.
Right.
Those are eventually, given enough time...
The entropy of the universe is always increasing.
So given enough time, those oil particles will coalesce and begin to either settle to the bottom or rise to the top. The emulsion will split. And when that happens, it causes all sorts of problems because in the case of sunscreens, you're relying on, you know, the solubility of the oil phase to help disperse the sunscreen active appropriately. So if that emulsion... integrity is compromised, in this case because of high temperatures, and the emulsion texture changes or it splits apart, then the sunscreen won't work as well because it's not going to be delivering a uniform film of the UV absorber across your skin, right? You may get too much in one spot, not enough in another spot. So right there, even if the sunscreen itself was still performing perfectly, because the emulsion had been damaged, the product wouldn't work as well. So that, I think, is probably the biggest concern here. Now, you know, cosmetic companies like L'Oreal, in this case, they do test their products at elevated temperatures to ensure they're stable. You know, so typically, you know, this testing includes storing products in ovens that have been equilibrated to, let's say, 37 degrees centigrade and 45 degrees centigrade for anywhere between a few weeks to a few months, depending on how you want to run your test.
Is that right? Right. Yeah, no, that's in, at least in the United States, the FDA has stability testing guidelines, and they do have accelerated temperatures stored for a certain amount of time, and they do go up to 45 C, and it has to pass that and still be effective. in the testing.
Right. So there's a reasonable chance that these products still make, you know, still may work fine for you. And, you know, you might be able to check with L'Oreal and get their opinion. I mean, they may be inclined to just say throw it out. But, you know, but if they could tell you that you know, the temperatures that you experienced are still within their guidelines, which they may be, you could be okay. So, you know, you could take a chance. Now, you might be able to do a little test to see, at least to get a sense of if they're working or not, right? You could, you know, buy one bottle of a new sunscreen and use that on half your face and use, you know, one of the old bottles on the other half of the face, just see if you see a big difference. I mean, that's directional at best.
Right.
But, you know, I think you should be careful, especially if you're going to be doing a chemical peel. That dramatically enhances the danger of sun exposure on your skin. So, if you are going to do some sort of test, do it before you get your chemical peel.
Yeah. So, great advice there.
All right.
Hey, Randy, we got another question here. This one is about a special type of water. And this comes to us through Facebook. Incidentally, we are on Facebook, and feel free to like us on Facebook, and you can post questions there. Boy, we take questions from everywhere, don't we?
We'll take anything we can get.
I can't wait till we get on Periscope.
Then we have to do video. We don't do well
All
on
right,
video.
Yeah. Anyway, Celeste asks, I have a fan on my cosmetic page telling me to try glacial water in a face cream, and somehow it's superior to regular water. When it is actually the brand, but now what's really happened is the brand is actually watering down their cream. It's because they added water as the ingredient for the first time.
I think,
right?
Yeah, I think there's maybe a translation error going on in the way she wrote this question, but I think what she's saying is there's water in the product, and then they're adding glacial water, so aren't you just now just selling a more diluted product?
I think that's
what she's saying.
It's a good point. First of all, water quality does matter, but it's more about protecting the product than it is about providing additional benefits to skin and hair.
Yeah.
For example, if they were using tap water to make their cosmetic product rather than distilled or deionized water, the preservative system is going to have to work harder to prevent bacterial growth.
Right.
Likewise, if all the minerals are not removed from the water in an aerosol product, then the metal can might corrode from the inside out.
Right.
It's also true that a high mineral content in water can have some benefits to skin, like Epsom salt can relieve psoriasis symptoms, for example. But we're talking about high concentrations here. So does this special water, like glacial water, make a difference in cosmetics? You know, not that I've seen. In fact, products that I've seen use that claim to have special water are usually mostly regular deionized water, and then they add a touch of the stuff just to make sure the claim is true. That's because water is heavy and it's very costly to ship. I challenge your reader to provide evidence that any specific cosmetic product gives you additional measurable cosmetic benefits due to the glacial or really any other kind of special water that you can get in there.
Yeah, and let me tell you, nobody is shipping water around to their plants. I mean, maybe they've got, you know, access to some natural spring water or something like that. But, you know, something like glacial water that's got to come, you know, it's just too expensive to do. And I tell you, I'm not going to mention the brand name this time.
Sure.
Getting high fives from the Beauty Brains attorneys here. We used to work on a brand that had glacial water in it. And you buy a little bottle of glacial water and you put in, you know, a couple of drops into a batch and that's it. So you're still using the conventional water, you know, which is whatever, you know, 90% of the product. Right. And then you're just adding this as a featured ingredient. What did our one listener call it? Essence of butterfly farts?
Exactly. And to tell you the truth, doing it, what you described, that's a perfectly legal way to make your product with glacial water.
Yeah.
And you couldn't tell, if you're a consumer, you can't tell whether they're doing it that way or not. Most likely, they are doing it that way.
Right. And by the way, Celeste, that additional, because, you know, as we just said, that additional glacial water is so small, you're also not diluting it down. So you're not hurting the product by putting it in. But the important thing is you're not adding any benefits either. So it's certainly not a reason to spend more money on the product.
Yeah. It's glacial water and micellar water and all these other ones are just marketing jiggery pokery, as they say in the UK.
There you go. All right. Well, I think we've got time for one more question. This one also came to us from Facebook. This one's from Emily. And she said that I read somewhere about using deodorant as an anti-shine makeup setting option. I wish I could remember where that was so I could include the link, but I can't. I thought that sounded crazy, but then she gives us her favorite anti-shine product, and she says it is a little, quote, deodorant-like, and she's asking if there are any similarities between the two products. So I thought this was an interesting question. Actually, I had never heard this one. So the makeup setting product that she asked about is formulated with a couple of different silicones, and I'll put the full ingredient list in the show notes. And those silicones are specifically designed to provide a very dry feel, waterproof matte coating. So it makes sense that that would work well both for anti-shine, you know, because some silicones do provide shine. So you wouldn't want to use that type of product in an anti-shine.
Yeah.
And it also would give you a nice smooth surface for the makeup to adhere to. Now, you know, so is that product similar to deodorants? Well, she actually sent me up the deodorant products, actually an antiperspirant, so there's a little different chemically. Now, both of those do contain some sorts of silicones, but they also contain a lot more of things like propylene glycol or fatty alcohols like stearyl alcohol. And those ingredients are going to make your face feel either wet and sticky or waxy and gross, depending on which, you know, specific product you're using. So really, no, you couldn't just pick up an antiperspirant and deodorant and expect it to perform the same way. It's not going to give you the matte effect. It's not going to give you that dry feel effect. Antiperspirant ingredients may not be good for your skin, your face, rather.
Right.
Now, this reminded me, though, of another example of a product you could use as a makeup setting product that actually would work. Do you remember this question from a couple of years ago about using the Monostat bikini chafing gel?
Yeah. I vaguely recall that.
Yeah. So when you look at those ingredients in the Monostat product, those are almost identical to makeup setting products. And in fact, depending on if you can get it on sale, the Monostat product was actually a little cheaper than some makeup setting products. So in that case, I would say go for it. I would see nothing wrong with using that sort of product on your face.
Yeah. So certainly based on the ingredient list, too.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, there you go.
You know what, your description, you said something about being wet and sticky. That reminds me of a joke, and I don't think we have enough jokes on the Beauty Brains.
As long as this doesn't lose our, doesn't give us an X-rated rating.
it's one of my favorites. I use this in my open mic nights. What is brown and sticky?
Chocolate gum? I don't know.
No, a stick. All right.
Thanks. He's here all week, everybody.
You know, you're not getting high quality jokes like that on the Paula Begon podcast.
Please, we love Paula Begon.
Oh, indeed.
All right. Well, Perry, we're about at the end of another fabulous episode, but I did want to just make one quick comment.
What's that?
Well, you know, when you heard in today's game of improbable products, you know, we're trying to make the show more interactive. And our listeners can help us do that in a couple of ways. So first of all, they can play the game with you, which is lots of fun.
That was great fun.
They can also record the introduction for the show. And, you know, we've been playing Master Barbara Williams' recorded intro, which is a lot of fun to hear that.
Yeah.
So we'd be glad to, you know, take recorded intros from our listeners. And
That's like that show Radiolab does that. Yeah, I always love that. Yeah.
Exactly. And then thirdly, they can record a question. You know, people send in a lot of written questions for us, but we don't get that many audio questions. And so they can record that on their smartphone and just send that right to us at thebeautybrains@gmail.com.
Yeah, that's great. And you know what else they can do to help support the show?
What's that?
Buy our latest book. It's okay to have lead in your lipstick.
And other books that we're flogging to death for the last 3 years.
You know, I was just reminded, like in show 101, that was the first time we'd never mentioned our book.
I think you're right. And I heard the listeners breathe a sigh of relief at not having to sit through another plug for that thing.
Well, we'll reduce the plugs for that. But it's still an excellent book if you haven't gotten it yet.
And it's available any place you buy electronic books. Or you can even, since we are, you know, moving into the holiday system, you can buy a hard copy and we'll autograph that for you. It makes a great Christmas present.
Excellent.
All right. Well, Perry, thanks again
for
another
great show. Looks like we talked the hell out of this show.
Yes, we did. So goodbye to you and to all our fabulous listeners. And until next time, everybody, remember, be brainy about your beauty.